Hi, I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, and welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Monday, August 30th, and I'm Jessica Steinberg, filling in for Amanda Borchel-Dunn. With me are Times of Israel founding editor David Horovitz and Arab Affairs correspondent Aaron Boxerman. Glad to have you here today.
Pleased to be here, Jessica.
Hey, Jessica.
David, let's start off with you and talk about Bennett's return from the U.S., Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, and his first meeting with U.S. President Joe Biden. Was the trip a success, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it was, by almost any standard you could choose to apply, in terms of the goals that were set up beforehand. You know, I don't think the expectations were placed particularly high, and therefore it wasn't too hard to reach them. But still, in terms of the decency with which Biden treated him amidst this terrible fallout from the Kabul blast, which delayed the meeting. In terms of how it was reported, yeah, it was pretty successful for Bennett, I would think. In terms of actual achievements, it was very important for Bennett and the way he presented this that the president stressed the U.S. commitment to ensure that Iran never gets nuclear weapons. I mean, it's just words, but nonetheless, those words were said. The Americans didn't talk about a military option, a credible military option, which I think Bennett and many Israelis would want to have heard, as a way of deterring Iran, but that was not expected. There was no discomforting of Bennett on the Palestinian issue publicly. Remember, Bennett is opposed to a two-state solution. He favors annexation. If he were leading a government in which he set the whole agenda, which he isn't, and he doesn't, because he's in a partnership with Lapid, theoretically, he would want to annex part of the West Bank, and the American administration would strongly oppose that, but they didn't make an issue of it. And there were other areas, getting Israel into the U.S. visa waiver program and so on, where Biden said the things that Bennett wanted to hear. You know, there were crowing in parts of the opposition camp when the meeting was delayed originally because of the Kabul blast, and much merriment that Bennett had missed his Thursday evening primetime slot Israel time with Biden. But by the time the meeting came around, and Bennett, who actually speaks perfectly good English and actually even had a little joke in there in his little presentation when he quoted from Isaiah, and after he'd given the quote in Hebrew, as he moved to translate or explain it, he said, "I can say anything now, right? Because," which he didn't say, "because you guys have no idea what I just said." And it was just a little minor, rather elegant and sweet, lighter comment. And it showed that he was at his ease. Now, you know, that may sound like, you know, why is David even talking about this? Because that's the thing that Netanyahu does. Netanyahu bestrides the world stage, and Netanyahu is at ease in the Oval Office, and Netanyahu uniquely is able to represent Israel. Now, the fact that Bennett could make a little joke does not mean that he is Netanyahu's equal in any of those matters. But it does, it was a little signal. It was part of a picture where had people been watching, they would have realized, well, actually, you know, Bennett is capable of not embarrassing Israel, shall we say, at the very least, in English, in the Oval Office. Now, you know, people were not watching in large numbers, and that for Bennett would have been one of the more galling aspects of this trip, that he did lose his Thursday evening primetime slot. And, you know, it wasn't particularly well covered in the American media and very problematically covered in the Hebrew media, on Israeli television, for example. The meeting began before Shabbat came in, but the part with the statements to the press actually unfolded after Shabbat had started. And Bennett is the leader of a small Orthodox party, and his potential constituency would not have seen that session live. So not perfect, but pretty good, both in terms of what we saw publicly and what we understand happened behind the scenes.
Right. It was fascinating to watch that there can be someone else who can speak in English to the world out there.
Hello, I'm Ari Lam, the host of Good Faith Effort, the podcast where we show how the values and ideas of the Bible can illuminate the most important conversations in society. Want to hear a major music exec talk about the book of Genesis in hip-hop? Leading venture capitalists on how the book of Isaiah informs their work? Or an Oscar-winning producer reflect on how religion can save the American soul? Well, then subscribe to Good Faith Effort on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and listen in to inspiring conversations you won't hear anywhere else.
Aaron, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and Defense Minister Benny Gantz met in Ramallah last night for the first face-to-face talks in over a decade. The PM's office then downplayed it. What does it all mean? Explain it to us.
So yes, Jessica, as you rightly noted, it's the highest level face-to-face meeting between Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and a senior Israeli politician at the highest level since 2010, since Netanyahu and Abbas met back during the Obama administration in Jerusalem, if I recall correctly, not in Ramallah. And, you know, since then, there have been occasional sort of side meetings. Netanyahu and Abbas, during, you know, the previous administration ran into each other at various summits, one back in 2015. Abbas and Netanyahu met at Shimon Peres's funeral, I believe, as well in 2016. But there wasn't this sort of sit down with senior officials from both sides. The meeting was attended by both the head of COGAT, who's Israel's liaison to the Palestinians, as well as the head of PA intelligence and another senior official in the Palestinian Authority named Hussein al-Sheikh. So, this is certainly something that we haven't seen for quite some time. Relations between Jerusalem and Ramallah have been, shall we say, chilly, especially over the last few years. Netanyahu and Abbas have not publicly spoken since at least 2017, especially as, you know, all sorts of initiatives that the Palestinians found less palatable came to the fore during the Trump administration, such as the proposed annexation of parts of the West Bank and the Trump peace plan, which they did not like, but which Israel seemed to find, you know, perfectly acceptable. And so as part of the new administration, there's been a change in policy, Jessica, essentially, where many people in the new Israeli government seem to want closer ties with the Palestinian Authority, to strengthen the Palestinian Authority, not with an eye towards a diplomatic process, not with an eye towards a peace process, but with the idea that, you know, if we can strengthen the PA, especially economically, that will ultimately be good for Israel. Now, Gantz has certainly been one of the more strident senior officials pushing for that. But it seems that, you know, this fits with the broader approach that's been endorsed by Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, this idea of shrinking the conflict, of easing Palestinian daily life, you know, easing some kinds of restrictions on the PA, working to advance economic cooperation, and so on. So in their meeting, Gantz and Abbas, according to, you know, their offices discussed, you know, economic cooperation as well as some security issues. And we'll have to see where it goes from here. I mean, as we reported just last week at TOI, the Palestinian Authority is going through a pretty deep economic crisis right now. There's a, you know, rising debts, rising deficit, the GDP is shrinking. And Israel has considered, you know, a number of steps, including a financial aid package or an advance on certain, you know, transactions between Israel and the PA to ease the burden somewhat on the PA. So we'll have to see where this goes. But I'd just like to add one more thing, which is that the crisis that the PA is facing is not just an economic one. It's also political, and they're losing legitimacy among their constituency, you know, among Palestinians who widely see them as, you know, ineffectual, corrupt, and increasingly authoritarian. So I'm sure that these economic measures are important, but I think it's certainly yet to be seen whether they can actually lead to, you know, the resolution of this, you know, very deep political crisis that the PA has found itself in, especially over the last few months.
I'm curious, just one follow-up question. In terms of the talks last night, was that something that was shrouded in secrecy? Did you find out about it after the fact? Did you know about it beforehand? How does that work?
Well, personally, I found out about it after the fact, and it was announced first by the Palestinians, I believe, by senior Palestinian official Hussein al-Sheikh on Twitter, and then a message was put out essentially by Gantz's office. It's certainly the sort of thing which, you know, they view as highly sensitive. You know, even just a few weeks ago, when the health minister from Israel and the health minister from the PA, as well as the environmental protection ministers, you know, met up to have very rare high-level meetings of ministers from both sides to discuss cooperation. That was also shrouded in secrecy, was very sensitive, and when we learned about it beforehand, everybody denied it or refused to comment on it in the days leading up to those meetings. So, you know, these are very highly sensitive. I'm sure that it was kept well hidden, and it's easy to understand why. I mean, you can see some of the criticism, certainly from the extreme right, that's come against Gantz for meeting with Abbas. and also on Abbas's side from Hamas and Islamic Jihad for meeting with Gantz. So sure. It's very easy to understand why any sort of, you know, public exposure of this kind of meeting before it actually took place could really have prevented it from actually happening.
Right. That makes sense. David, going back to U.S. relations again, you wrote last week extensively about the errors made in the U.S. pullout from Afghanistan and the experiences of both Israel and the U.S. when they end up cutting and running, as you wrote, which I thought was so succinct. Tell us a little bit about that, what your thoughts were and what your thoughts continue to be on that situation.
This is a very nasty region, and if you don't appear robust and determined and competent, you pay. And I'm not making comparisons, for example, with Israeli pullouts from southern Lebanon and from Gaza. And there are considerations that attach to every such initial entry and eventual withdrawal. But in some cases, you know, there are themes. And I think that the biggest concern as an Israeli and as someone who utterly cares about our partnership with the United States and as somebody who cares deeply about the United States, including because it's the world's only superpower and it stands for the values that we want to advance for freedoms and democracies and moral values and so on. The concern is, for Israel and for America, of an America that appears to be not as capable as it should and not as engaged as I think it needs to be in our part of the world. Now, being very selfish from an Israeli point of view, of course, the more robust and capable America looks in the Middle East, the safer we feel in Israel because we have the shared interests and the shared values and therefore we're in it together. But the point that I've tried to make in a couple of pieces that I wrote, the piece that you mentioned and a piece that I wrote about how Bennett approached his conversation with Biden, because I think he was trying to make the same point, is the argument that an America engaged in the Middle East is crucial to America's well-being. Because if you turn your back on some of these incredibly dark and evil, repressive, misogynistic, benighted forces, you're not only exposing the better parts of the Middle East to a greater threat, you're placing greater risk upon yourself because these forces have global ambitions. You know, Iran, for example, the world's leading sponsor, state sponsor of terrorism, Israel is the little Satan. America is the great Satan. Iran has all of Israel within rocket range. That has not stopped it trying to expand its rocket range capabilities to bring in Europe and eventually the United States. America knows what terrible harm can be done to America in America by terrorist organizations that are able to flourish far away and plot the most nefarious schemes. I mean, we're coming up to the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So that's the point that I was trying to make. You know, our alliance with the United States is partly because America has realized that we're that dependable ally with the same values right in the middle of all this. But my concern is again, just to sum up, that an America that seems to be disengaged from the Middle East and not as smart as it needs to be in the Middle East, the concern there is certainly for Israel, but it's also for America itself.
Right. And of course, there's all the other concerns, coronavirus, economy, all the other things that the U.S. has to deal with.
Right. And you understand that they're stretched and there are, you know, many, many priorities. But you worry that this could and should have been handled differently and that it will not end here.
Okay. And on that note, I'm thanking you both for joining us today and wishing everyone a good week and a good Monday. Be well.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from The Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to The Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raoul Woodliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.